wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
And we are not together. Eric is in the new basement studio, but I am in our Riverside studios. We are apart and quarantined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think now that we're actually talking, I need to turn your volume up a little bit for me. I hope it doesn't feed back or anything.
No. I mean, I've got, as they say in the business, I have my cans on.
Help me. I don't have any cans on.
Well, I mean,
so your speakers are coming out to my microphone, so I just want to make sure they don't backfill.
No, it's all right. It's not too. I mean, again, when this show goes up, I'm going to sound great, and you're going to sound on the other end of the phone because we did it by Skype.
No, I shouldn't sound like I'm there. On Skype, you're supposed to sound full fidelity. The reason that phones sound bad is because they take out all the bottom end, but on a computer, it should keep all the bottom end.
Yeah, it does. I think it's your room. You just sound like you're in a. I think it's your microphone. You just sound like you're in a bathtub.
I don't know anything about that. I'm not in a bathtub.
So in his bath by the new basement, by the lake, I think is what it is. So anyway, yeah. We are together, but we are apart.
Yeah, we're using, did you say Skype already?
I did say that we are using Skype.
And so Skype, for those who might remember, you know, a few years ago, that was the cutting edge of video conferencing and talking to your family members over the computer and being able to see pictures of them and all. And oddly enough, in this time of everybody wanting to video chat with their families and work coworkers, it's not the product everybody is using.
No, it's not. Zoom has become Zoom and is it Microsoft Teams?
Yeah, Teams is kind of related in the sense that, see, Skype got bought by Microsoft. And so this is part of the problem that Microsoft has bounced around from product to product kind of thing. But there was an article in The Verge talking about Microsoft Skype struggles have created a Zoom moment because, you know, if anything would have been equipped to take things over. Because Teams is, I think you can use it personally now, but it is primarily a business-focused product.
Right.
Whereas Zoom, I think the real reason Zoom is so easy is because you can set it up so it doesn't have a password. People just need a 6-digit number or 9-digit number, whatever it is, to get into the room, and you don't have to have any special. You can put applications on your phone and your computer, but you can also just do it in a browser.
But that would explain why it's getting hacked everywhere. Apparently, is the big concern, that white supremacists and pornographers, they seem to have quoted both those groups of people as hacking Zoom. But and there's a joke in there about who do you want to be hacked by, and it's probably not white supremacists.
So I got that reaction when I was planning with some family members, was planning a Zoom call, and they said, oh, I don't know if I feel comfortable with Zoom, and sent one of these articles talking about all the security problems with Zoom, and their suggestion was to go with Google Hangouts, which is another Google-based product where you can do the similar stuff, and it's designed sort of more friendly. It's not a business-oriented thing. But it's so such baloney when you read these articles. It just people need to write an article about something because the security issue – and these people like, oh, there's pornographers and Nazis showing up on calls, is because the default setting on is to not have a password. And so this number, it's not like people can just find numbers. That's not really hacking it. That's because you leave your door open. You know, they're not doing some magical computer tricks. They're just getting a hold of numbers and they show up. And when you show up in somebody's call, you can kick them out. Like the only weird thing is this happened, I guess, for some school things. And I'm sure it was like a kid in the school said, get the password to some friend with a Nazi tattoo and they show up on the screen. It isn't like they get into your computer. It's not like they grab a bunch of things. Like the other complaint is they claim to have end-to-end decryption, meaning like from your desktop to their top. And it turns out that wasn't true. But again, I'm not doing state secrets when we're having a podcast
So really, when Zoom being hacked is the equivalent of someone bursting into your room, but in real life, but Zoom being hacked doesn't mean they're going to take your wallet. Because whenever right, the media go, oh, you're being hacked.
Credit card information in to get a Zoom account, yeah. And you name, and you know, you want to, just like any other online thing, you want to have a secure password and all those things to keep different password than you have for different products. So if it was, but there's not really exposure. I mean, if somebody was to listen in on your calls, let's talk a little bit in a minute about like what calls we've been doing over Zoom or other products other than this podcast. Who cares, right? Like they get to listen to some story that you're telling with your college buddies from 25 years ago.
Right. Yeah, so really, in a strange way, getting hacked on Zoom is no different than walking down the street and having some guy drive by and lean out of his window and call you an asshole.
strange.
Right? That's what it is, though. What I'm saying is,
that's my opinion. I could be proven wrong, but the
media have been using the term hacked. And of course, whenever you talk to anyone about internet security and you use the word hacked, rightly so, your immediate leap is someone is stealing my passwords. Someone is going to have an access to my bank account. Someone is ordering a bag of Amazon groceries under my account. Whereas in fact, that's not the case with Zoom being hacked. Zoom being hacked is basically, again, someone eavesdropping on your conversation in the Starbucks.
And again, I'm not going to suggest we have the National Security Council have a meeting over Zoom, because that version, if they could get into the meeting, it's probably not unlikely. Well, they would just listen to sort of secrets.
Yeah.
But you would think that the government would not do that. That said, we've got a guy who communicates with the entire nation over Twitter and Instagram and whatever else. And so they may very well be using Zoom for all we know.
Haven't the Russians already broken into our system? So really, getting in via Zoom is not a big deal.
It's like when people would have a convertible, you leave the door unlocked, right? Because what you don't want is them to cut open the top. So you just, listen, if you're going to rob my convertible, just come in and rob it and take whatever happens to be in here, but just don't wreck the top. And so basically by having a Zoom meeting, which is insecure, you're just basically saying, don't ruin my computers by hacking some things with code and changing things around. Just come on in the front door.
Come on in the front door. You will be bored very quickly because Zoom meetings, I have found some, my first ever Zoom meeting, I was in with like 14 other people. It was a work thing. So I hit the button so that everyone came up, and it looked like the old Hollywood squares, which was kind of exciting for me for a few minutes. But after a while, I just sat there looking at the computer, like just staring at the computer and trying to not get caught looking away or writing stuff down or clearly surfing the internet. Because at the end of the day, virtual or not, the meeting wasn't very interesting.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
I think it's in this, for those of us like us who are working from home but having to continue to work just a remote thing, I think it is useful because it is, for whatever reason, we're programmed to have a more normal connection with people when you're looking them in the eye. I'm like, here I am, I'm looking at you on the screen.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But you can see facial expressions, you can see what's going on a little bit better. And I think you have a better, like, animal kind of read of other people when you have the screen. So having it on occasionally. So in fact, my calls I've had them with work people, but it's principally been in lieu of our, like, let's go to lunch together and catch up on things.
Oh, really?
Work and personal. Yeah. Each once a week, like a little happy hour / coffee hour.
Well, with that in mind, just as a purely anecdotal, rather empirically informed decision, do you believe that when this is all over, because again, your article, and we will link it in the blog, says, Skype missed the boat, Zoom's kind of, has given Zoom a moment or something. But do you think the Zoom moment will extend beyond, beyond this, or will we all go back to doing business as we always done?
I think there'll be significantly more. Once people learn how the video conferences work, and I noticed there was a little bit of you get those appointment invites. I mean, you don't get a lot of outside, because a lot of your stuff is just internal, but I get lots of invites from clients and people outside of the system and other people at other places, other law firms and things like that. But I've seen more and more that were through WebEx or through Microsoft Teams or Zoom, less of the Zoom ones, but they were, the appointments were set up that way. And so it'd go into your Outlook calendar this way, but people are using it as a end-to-end solution, both for conference calls and for getting on a screen. And what I heard, one of my coworkers has got family, I think it is, who are more in the tech industry, and they were amazed that we do so many conference calls. Like, that's my bread and butter, is like getting on conference calls with people.
Oh, really?
Why wouldn't you just click on a thing on your screen and be able to see each other? Like, and it's like, well, it's true, because if that's easier than figuring out the dial-in for the phone thing and trying to find the dial-in number, then it is kind of makes sense. Why don't you have that? The only difference is, you can't pick your nose on the screen so much, and you have to, like, look a little decent, and you kind of have to pay attention.
Well, I will say this for real too. And my only experience with conference calls is sort of a speaker phone system in the middle of a big table. And I find that I sit there spending most of the time sort of cocking my head and peering at it because I haven't quite caught exactly what the person said. But it's true. If you are sitting there looking at your own device or looking at your own iPad or whatever it may be, I think a lot less gets lost in translation.
Yeah. And you always have those moments on the conference calls where people are like, oh, are you on mute? Well, now you'd be able to like see what's actually, wait, why isn't that person responding? Yeah. Look, their lips are moving, but there's no noise or something like that. And you'd be able to jump in. And you probably reduce the amount of multitasking, which a lot of times you get on these calls with people. You're like, I don't actually have your attention. It's very annoying. And so it'd be nice to have a screen to be able to do these things. So
I think what will happen on the other side of this is that bombing other people's conversations on Zoom will become like a thing. Like, hey, buddy. Do you want to go and see whose meeting we can bust into this evening?
So I don't know if you've
like
had
smashing mailboxes like with a baseball bat.
You said you had a work Zoom call, but have you had any personal ones?
I have with you the other day. There was a group of us in a Zoom call, but that's the only time I've used it. Because at the end of the day, you know me, I'm a late adopter. Well, I'll just call someone.
Well, so just think about busting into things. So I had one last weekend with a bunch of college friends. We were all in a fraternity together. And so we had, I guess, 9 or 10 people on the call. And so we're all there. And a couple of my friends are married to women who were in a sorority together. And we knew a bunch of people over there. And the ones who were like, so there's like two spouses, maybe three. Now I think, three spouses all from the same sorority. And you know, I know this makes me sound like just the cheesiest frat college boy, but in any event, they were having a call at the same time, and because they were in like different rooms, so my friends were like, hey, you know, I jokingly said, do you guys have the number for that call? And they said, yeah, here it is. And so what we did is we effectively jumped in on their call and sort of like you would do in college where you'd like, oh, we're raiding your party kind of thing. And so we all showed up at their call and suddenly like it was, you know, 50% guys and the girls and we all knew each other from back in college. And, you know, it was kind of funny for 10 minutes, you know, caught up with a bunch of people we hadn't seen in a while. And then the ladies were like, okay, you can go now. And so all the guys hung up their contacts and they went on with their call. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
The other one I did, what was the other personal one? Now I'm forgotten my story.
All right.
I noticed you have your USA shirt on, by the way.
I do. Yes. Yes. I'm proud. And in fact, today I had, not myself, but my significant other who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, filled out our census form.
Oh, I was thinking about doing that.
And because now I'm a citizen, now I'm a legit citizen, I didn't have to worry about filling out that information. If you want to get rid of me, come and get me, man.
I don't know if you had to, well, be careful.
Come at me, bro.
They can roll these things back. Nothing is guaranteed. They may go back to my grandparents and tell me I've got them.
So anyway, we are talking to each other, but we're talking to each other via Skype. Basically, you were like, hey, do you want to do this by Zoom? But my technology in terms of recording the show is set up for Skype.
But see, Zoom, you can record it right. And I think you can in Skype, actually. I'm not, you know, you're going through all the effort of putting it on your board, but I think you can just make the application record it for you.
All right.
I thought about doing that. Maybe I'll do that halfway through and maybe my recording will come out better than the professional one you're doing on the other end.
All right. Anyway, we are talking to each other via Zoom. And I think, what was the next thing? Talking of technology.
So, you know, there's obviously, everybody knows there's myriad ways in the way our lives are changing. You know, the obvious things are staying in. But one of the things that was one of the first things to happen, but is really only soaking into me is how it's changing my life, is the absence of professional sports.
Yes. And well, any kind of sports, because I know this would have been the NCAA basketball. But I'm going to give my comment, my conclusion first and foremost before we talk. I've suddenly realized how much time and how my day was scheduled around sports on TV.
Yeah.
Not how much I've, because again, I want to be very clear with this. Yes, I'm missing watching games, but to be fair, I'm filling that time with other entertainment. But what I am noticing is, oh my gosh, I've got absolutely nothing to do today. And I'm suddenly more conscious of having nothing to do, whereas I think with most of our sports and all of us, and we've had this conversation before about having teams and you watch your team, but there's also like, if you're doing nothing, well, then you'll have the game on, like if it's another game. So at that moment, you've suddenly, even though you're kind of doing nothing, you've gone from doing nothing to, hey, I watched the game today. Now that there are no games to watch, I'm suddenly more conscious of, ooh, I have nothing to do.
And then you're like confronted with the fact that like, well, I should probably do something.
Hours of my weekend have been returned to
you from doing things half the time.
Yes.
So my principal observation is similar to that, and which is that like, I'm not a sit down and watch sports all the time type of person. You know, I don't spend the whole weekend just whatever sports are on. My teams be on certain days and to watch those. But what I realized is that a lot of times when it wasn't on, it was a leader into the TV. Like, so if I'm sitting around in a morning and let's say Chelsea's not playing, but it's a morning weekend, so you know there's soccer games on, I'd be like, well, I'm sort of reading the newspaper and sort of doing this, I'll turn this on. And then the game would get boring, and so you'd flip off it and you start looking around, and suddenly you're like, well, what's on my DVR too? And you go there and you go to these things. But without the sports to get me on the TV in the first place, I have no interest in turning on my TV in the morning or like all these other oddball times of day.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
That you would normally watch these things. And so I think, you know, they always talk about how much more money sports are worth on TV because people actually watch it live now. But yes, I think they probably, I don't know if anybody's done the analysis of how much sport just leads you into TV in the first place, that like you don't end up watching sports, but it makes you turn the TV on. And so therefore you may end up watching a Seinfeld rerun complete with ads and everything because of the fact that the sports are on that got you to turn the TV on in the first place.
To your point there, and if you live in the United States, and I'm sure there are similar instances in the rest of the world, I've noticed that during the NFL season, the second game of the doubleheader has begun to start later and later and later than it used to back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening, like, and so back in the day, that second game on a Sunday, if it went long, that, you know, it would overrun the news or the next thing would start late. But I noticed the TV companies aren't too bothered now, because you're right. If I'm watching the end of the game, then by rights, my TV is now attuned to the channel that's, you know, got Murder, She Wrote or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And so it is, it's this notion of, well, the sports is on. Well, when it's finished, you're just going to leave your telly on. You're not going to, oh, I'm finished with that, let me turn off the TV. That doesn't happen. People just leave it on all day.
Yeah.
It did. But losing sports has also created this weird sort of scheduling thing. Because as an extension of your point, like this morning, I woke up and I'm like, ooh, let me wash the car. And I washed the car for the first time on a Saturday morning. We're recording on a Saturday. The first time in a Saturday morning in like a year. I would normally do it another time because Saturday morning, there might be a game on, or whatever game would be an excuse for me to have to not wash my car. So it is interesting. It's just created the lack of schedule has created scheduling issues for me.
Slight tangent around that, and we'll come back to the sports, but I was having a discussion with a fan of the pod, Christian, yesterday.
Okay.
And we were talking about cars, and I was talking about the fact that I don't use my car at all. I know you've had to go places a little bit more often than I have, but since I've been working at home, I'm just really planted all day at home. I don't drive in the morning, and I don't have any reason to drive anywhere, and I really can't because I'm in the middle of work in the middle of the day. And so I suddenly realized, geez, I haven't gotten in my car for a week. And I was thinking to myself, you know, if one of the things that people predict is that as a result of this, people are going to be more prone to work from home, and there'll be other options, and why not like save on your office buildings and things like that, if people can do things at home. And I was thinking, if that was the scenario, what would I end up as a car? Would I basically say, well, it's not worth spending as much money on a car because I'm just not in it as much? On the other hand, would I then say, well, shoot, my car now becomes more like a fun thing, and I don't care what mileage I get. And right now gas is cheap as dirt. And like, if everybody moves out of their cars, everything's going to get cheaper. Am I going to be like, well, I'm just going to get that car that's fun? It doesn't have to be practical at all, because it doesn't matter about sitting in, you know, I'm not going to sit in traffic. I'm just going to go on a drive to go like three places a week.
True story. So today, after washing the car, I decided I had, in my mind, I felt it was essential work that I could only do from the office, because my office has a much better printer and scanner than I have at home. So I used it as an excuse. Now, again, I don't live very far from work, so at the weekend, a 12, 15-minute drive.
So you decided to violate the DC law by going to your non-essential job.
My excuse was, if I was going to be stopped, it was essential because I had to run something to have someone get paid. So that, to me, that is an essential function of my work.
Maybe what you think is essential, but it may not actually be essential by law.
I really enjoyed. Now, again, I mean, you and I have nice cars and we like the act of driving, but I made a point of really enjoying my time in the car. And I was only here for 30 minutes today total, because I know, well, I'm probably not going to be getting in it for another 5 or 6 days.
Right.
If that.
And so, if you were in a scenario where like this was your permanent pattern, would you get a nicer car or a lesser car? Because it would be weird to spend a bunch of money on a car that you use once a week. I mean, that's a lot of money to spend on something that you know you get in 50 times a year.
I would get. You know what I would buy? I would buy an older car that I always wanted to have.
That'd be good. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it's because again, I still start in a point. I still start in a point where owning the car is a. Pleasurable is the wrong word, but it's not a status thing. I want to drive. I enjoy the act of driving, so I want to drive something when I'm in it. I feel either viscerally, ooh, this car is very sporty, or don't I look cool when I get to the stoplight?
Now you don't have to worry about putting 20,000 miles a year.
Right, exactly.
You don't need it to go to work every day. You're just going to use it for, and not just pleasure, but like a lesser amount of mileage.
But because I like driving as an activity, then I wouldn't buy a unemotive price, not an option. I wouldn't buy a car that I didn't enjoy driving. Like, for example, this is no different. I like riding my bike. So I have no problem spending more money comparatively on a bike because I like to ride my bike. I haven't bought a bike just to hang it in the garage. Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, yeah. I've got a bike. I like doing stuff on it. So the car is the same way. So I'm not sure it would change. It might change my choice of car. But at the end of the day, I'm not sitting there thinking, ooh, I can save this money. Do you know what I mean? I don't think of it as like, ooh, I'm suddenly saving money. I don't need a car. I'm not one of those people. I like having a car.
All right, back to sports, though. Okay. So,
well, actually, it is related because when we get to sports, we will be talking about cars.
Well, we'll come back to cars. But one of the sports things, obviously, the programmers are looking for things. There's lots of old games. There's a couple of old games that have personal meaning to me. Like they're running a bunch of the World Series games from last year, and I'll peek in on those. But I'm not very motivated to watch a sport, even if I don't know what the outcome is. The fact that I know that it happened already makes it uninteresting.
Yes.
So they now have a number of virtual sports, and we'll start with the one you mentioned.
Well, before you do it, I do want to pick up on that point for a moment, and I'm going to circle back to sports entertainment. But obviously, one of the websites I get my news from is the Guardian's website, and they have, like a lot of places, like ESPN, that when games are on, they have sort of not
like live feed of what's going on. Like it's not Twitter, but
but it's similar. So the Guardian and the Guardian's one is called Minute by Minute. And so basically a dude is sitting there watching it on TV and he will type, "Oh, goal by Chelsea. You know, what a great play by such and such." So what they've been doing, you know, a couple of days a week is basically taking old sports events, having the same writers do it. So because there's always lots of entertaining asides and Twitter so-and-so such and such. And they've been picking classic sports moments. And I can't say... If it's a game that I like, for example, there was one game.
It's kind of more like, I mean, it's going to be live commentary, but it's also more like, it's like when you watch a movie and you see the people critiquing a movie.
So it's like that. And I have found that if it's a game that I remember, like there was a World Cup game from the 70s that I remember as a kid, and they were going later today, the minute by minute of that game. So I'm like, I read it when it was on live. And then later on, I sat there and read it all later. And again, it was because you remember the game and you remember the moments. It was sort of an entertaining way of sort of bringing sports to life, which, to be honest with you, I sitting there and reading for 15 minutes later, the report, the commentary of the game, I would do that before sitting there and spending 90 minutes watching the game on TV. Because it's a time thing. And that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me, you know, again, I'm going on a tangent. If people haven't looked for the English sports announcers doing like real life things.
Some of them have been very funny.
It's pretty easy to Google it and find it. I think it's one of them does them under hashtag life commentary.
It's yes.
LIFE commentary. And so there's a bunch. The best one I like is the one that the guy only did one, which is the two dogs eating.
Yes.
Food. and like this commentary about it. So I recommend go looking at that.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's just, it's sort of fun. And like I say, you sit there and but it is less of an imposition on your time, which was kind of my point.
Mm-hmm. So what was the sporting event you sent me to? I didn't read it too closely. It's horse racing related, I think.
Today, on the day that we are recording, was the day in England of the big... We have two very big horse races every year, in the same way that this country kind of has a couple, but it's all during the flat season. We have, obviously, the British Derby, which is in the summer, but then we have something every March called the Grand National, which is over the fences. Right. And it's it's been a long-time event, and it's one of those things where... You know, because we have a off-track betting culture, we did, and now obviously like everything else, the internet, you know, everyone would place a bet. There's always like, ooh, this is the money that all the housewives are putting.
People do it. I mean, if you have legal gambling, people would do the Kentucky Derby. But
so obviously the Grand National got canceled due to everything. But what they did was they ran today a virtual Grand National. And they had the papers all had runners and riders. And... It was on at the same time, and it was on TV. The only
were they real horses, or are they just computer generated?
I think it's computer generated, but I've looked for different links. I didn't actually watch it live. I will try and link to the articles in the blog. The pictures on, via the internet of the event. It was a very realistic simulation, which is all what these video games are, but it was a video-generated horse race. And anyway, what they did back in England was the betting shops. Still took bets, but all the proceeds that anyone who lost money,
did they pay the winners?
The winners, I think the winners got paid out. I think, I'm not sure. I might be wrong when I said this. I have the suspicion that the winners got paid out, but all the money was donated to the National Health Service. That all the stakes that were placed that didn't turn into payout was donated. Right. So if you placed the bet and you lost, your money went to the National Health Service.
Okay.
But apparently it had very good. There was a lot of interest in it, and here's the thing: they had done it before the last couple of years, like the night before. They had a race and it created a lot of interest, and I think apparently they're expecting ratings similar to. The actual race itself, because it was being broadcast on TV as well in lieu of the race. So who knows?
If I read, like, I half read the article, but my impression was it wasn't like really gaming out the whole race as much as it was like, listen, this one horse had a 1 in 200 chance, this other horse was a 2 in 2 to 5 or whatever it was. And then they let the thing randomly generate whoever it was wins the race.
Yes.
Like, and I, you know, it's kind of weird because it's just a very long coin toss. Basically, you know, obviously not a 50-50, but in other words, it's just the result that matters. It's not like between, you know, if you really wanted to game it out, you could say, oh, which one starts faster and like, you know, give them all these attributes to like have those things work differently. You know, we before this whole thing started, we had taken a peek at virtual football league called FCFL. It actually on one of the channels here, it's like 11 sports or something like that. It's one of these very small sports things. They'd show the games on it. And when I first watched it, it looks like a video game football, you know, nicely rendered. You'd think there's people playing with a joystick, but apparently it's really people create the teams with different talent pieces and different playbooks, but they just then start the computer running and it runs the whole game. So presumably it's making like random decisions on every pass. Like, oh, this person's 60% completion. So 60% of the time they should make their completion, except if they play against this defense and things. And people can, I don't know if it's open or what it is, but, and they have real announcers on it, which I'm sure they had announcers on that racing. And it's very weird, but on the same time, I'm like, well, maybe this is it's more interesting than a football game that's a replay because you don't know how it's going to come out. Now, you have no rooting interest. Like, they don't have any real teams in it or anything. You know, it's made up team name. So, you know, why would I root for the local team when the local team is just inside of a computer box somewhere in Boise?
Well, but this cuts to your point, though, about sports real sports in general. There are people who watch teams and there are people who watch players. And what I mean by that is, so again, if you said to me that, you know, Arsenal, my team, were playing Chelsea, your team, in this format where two computers were going to go against each other, I would check in on it for a while, and I would stick it. I would stick with it for a while. Now, I'm not interested in having some dude controlling it, but if it was the computer doing it, then it would definitely pique interest for me, but only because it's my team. But I think there's a lot of people. The point I'm making is, I think there is a ceiling on the interest for this sort of thing, because a large section of the sports entertainment sort of audience are drawn to, hey, is Tom Brady playing? Hey, is Michael Jordan playing? Do you know what I mean? Specifically with team sports.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would watch it more because I'd be wondering like how accurate the renderings were. Did they make the players like? I don't mean like pictures, but I mean were their skill sets and their abilities true to form? You know, I think I mentioned when they canceled the NCAA tournament, I thought they should have done, and I'm sure it would have taken too long to get all the rights and get everything set up to do this. They should have done a virtual NCAA tournament where they took everybody's skill sets and their stats, and they said, okay, let's put that into a computer and have it play out the games, because 100% I would have ended up watching every Virginia game. There was a guy, it was a Twitter feed called Tournament 2020 or 2020 Tournament, I can't remember, and I think he just did this on his own, where he created a tournament, and then when each game would be scheduled, you'd get a series of tweets that would say, oh, here's the halftime score, and then, like, this is going on. And I went back. I didn't know it was going on at the time, so I went back to, like, this Virginia got upset in the not upset because they were a lower seed. I think they lost in a 6-3 game to somebody. But they had it, like, go right up to the – like, Virginia was ahead by 20 points at some point, and it comes back, and, like, Virginia scores with 3 seconds left, and then, like, miss – or the other team does, and then Virginia misses at the end. They lose. And I can't tell you. I was, like, aggrieved that they had made Virginia lose in the round there.
Well, 538, the website, have been running articles – like what would have happened in the NCAA today. And so I'm presuming now, honest with you, I've not been reading those articles because because this is where I start. I'm the most that any kind of artificial sports will get out of me is curiosity. And what I mean by that is this, I would have watched, if it was live, I would have watched the virtual Grand National today. And I think in prior years, when they'd run it, when they'd done this event on the Friday night before the race, I can pretty much say, yeah, I would have watched it then too, because it's only asking 4 or 5 minutes of my time. But sitting there and watching any event that's not real, yeah, I think this is my point here. It is not a replacement of any kind for me. Even the racing stuff, and we're going to talk about the NASCAR racing. Now, again, when I don't play computer games. So I think at that moment that suddenly puts me in a certain sort of demographic box in terms of all of it anyway. I would, if I played computer games, I would probably do a lot of the driving games, funnily enough, because we've just talked about driving. So the NASCAR stuff, I was more than happy to watch it. You know, you sent me some links. I watched some of it. You asked me today, a Formula One do anything? Yeah, I would watch that too. But in terms of investing any kind of time, no, I'm going to go and wash my car.
So, yeah, the NASCAR one was different in that it was real drivers against each other. I guess.
Sure, yeah.
I think that league predates this whole problem. There's this whole health epidemic. But and so there's people who are expert in the video game, but then they also invited in people. So, like Dale Earnhardt Jr., who retired from active racing, he goes in there. And when you looked, the people, they were all doing it from their homes, basically. And they had different setups. Like one person basically had a glorified, you know, like a plasticky gear shift on a desktop kind of thing. And then other people had like these cockpits with three screens wrapping around them. And you could all apparently play the same on the same technology platform, but you could have different types of equipment. And, you know, to be honest, because car racing on TV is all very bold colors and things, you know, when they switched to being on a computer, you wouldn't necessarily pick it up on a wide shot, at least when you turned on the TV. And so you go, well, geez, you know, this could be at least as decent as watching the real thing.
Oh, I'm not. I thought it looked great. I only watched it via like an article linked. I think you'd sent me something and I found something somewhere else and only clicked on the link, you know, if it was embedded in the article. And I'm like, yeah, it still looks great. Like I would have, I'd give it a go one time. But then after that, yeah, it's not real.
They should make it like they would have it on TV, and then at home you could be in it. Like, it wouldn't influence the overall race in the sense that, like, not every, like, you don't have 20,000, 30,000, 100,000 cars on this thing, but like each of you can individually play the game with the 40 people who are the experts kind of thing, and, you know, get lapped around. It's like being in Top Gear and having the junky car on the track.
No, I think that is now, yeah, that is something that would interest me. But just as a spectator experience, yeah, it has a ceiling for me.
Can I claim intellectual property rights in that idea? So when somebody does it,
definitely, you can.
Sure.
So anything else on virtual sports?
No. We have a virtual sport of a sort, you know, we can talk about here next, which is bear hunting.
Yes. I didn't know if this was a real thing. What I mean by that is I thought this was just something in my neighborhood. I had noticed that all the houses in the neighborhood suddenly had like teddy bears in the window, and I was out walking the dog, and it was explained to me by my significant other that you've got to put a bear in the window because it helps keep the little kids engaged when they're out with their parents. And so we have done that, but I actually, only because we're all cut off from each other at the moment, I thought this was just something in our neighborhood. I didn't realize this was a thing everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, so apparently it's been inspired in a number of neighborhoods by a book called We're Going on a Bear Hunt, which is by Michael Rosen and Helen, and illustrated by Helen Oxenberry. It's, of course, a kid's book. These are both British folks, by the way.
We love our bears.
Apparently is not only a novelist and child book author, but was the Children's Laureate from 2007 to 2009 in Britain, and is a political columnist and a big supporter of Corbyn, and back in the last time of campaigns. They're both very old. Helen is
awesome. Yeah, how did that work out for you? Yeah.
1938. And so this book, and there's actually a YouTube like animated story of it, if you don't want to bother getting the book, but I guess it's people going out on a walk and dealing with obstacles and getting through them. But what it's become in this era where kids can't get together and play is, if your neighborhood does this, you put these all out, and then, you know, people can walk around with their kids spotting for bears. And
yes. So
same thing's going on in our neighborhood. And I think, one of the girls in high school or junior high school compiled a list, you know, their little hobby, you know, people would send it in. And so this way people would know it's fairly sprawling. They know what addresses to go to and what part of the neighborhood has more of these. And so we put one of our bear statues on a bicycle in the window. And some people put, you know, if the bears can stand it, have it outdoors in a tree.
Oh.
Put in the back window of your car, you know, because where you are, it's much easier. Like, you can more easily see into people's windows.
Yes.
Most of the house here set back a little further, so people will set them up. But I mean, it's a ton of them. Like, I saw a list and must have had 200 houses that had like some sort of bears on them. And so
this is not just an activity for kids. When I've been walking the dog, I've been like, ooh, look at that one over there. Ooh, yeah. Look at that bear there. Ooh, that's a new one. Oh, you no,
I've been fishing amongst the grown-up family members who can spot the most bears. And
well, I made sure that the bear in our window is actually one of the world-famous Harrods bear. It's actually a bear from Harrods. So I guarantee it's far more expensive than some of the nasty-ass-looking bears I've seen people throwing up in their window.
Sun-facing window. It's not going to fade out from being in the window, is it?
Well, no, it's made out of material. Material doesn't fade, does it?
Sure, in the sun. Yeah, if you put leave your ball cap in the back window of your car, like after a while it starts like lose all its color because of the sun bakes it and bleaches it.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I think the bear that we have in the window is a polar bear, so he's not going to be losing too much color.
Yeah.
Might go a funny like beige color, but beyond that, yeah. So no, I mean that they're everywhere in our neighborhood, and I'm glad that you filled me in there, because when it started, I thought it was just a local thing.
Like, yeah, somebody else in the neighborhood wanted to have like colored rocks around, and they had to point out, like, they knew the problem right off the bat. It was, you can't have a bunch of kids handling the colored rocks, and they're like, well, we would put the colored rocks, but we would tell them not to like handle them. And I'm like, that's not gonna work. You can send kids around to see colored rocks.
Like, so leaving them in the driveway.
But it'd almost be like an Easter egg hunt, but they're rocks, so you don't have to worry about them like getting rotten. But it was but I was like, you're gonna invite a bunch of like toddlers and young kids around to, oh, you can't touch that color rock, you just have to spot the colored rock.
I have noticed in my neighborhood there has been an outburst of people doing chalk drawings on the pavement.
Oh, I was about to, some people have been pushing Christmas lights going back up, but I'm like,
oh really?
some slides up a second time.
No, and if you fall off your roof putting your lights back up, is that really a good use of the ambulance's time right now?
This whole illness thing is a question of probabilities. If you put up your Christmas lights twice a year, you have twice the chance of falling off a ladder.
Yes. And like I say, those EMTs, they have better things to do than coming out to find to pick up some dude who's sprained his ankle.
For sure. We got other things we got to work on here. You can't be messing around with that.
So anyway, talking of stuffed animals, you sent me an article, because also about TV and what we're watching now that, you know, there isn't sports on TV. You sent me an article from Vanity Fair that was entitled, "Why Doesn't Disney Plus Have More Muppet Stuff?"
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. And we've talked about the Muppets before on this show, obviously.
Our highest rated shows of all time.
Yes, yes. That was that Puppets in Space. We've talked about the Muppets, but we also have spent a lot of time talking about Disney Plus. Go back and listen to our shows in the fall where we talked about The Mandalorian and all the other stuff. But when you sent me the headline, I was always confused. And we had this discussion when we talked about Disney Plus about its relationship with the Muppets.
Yeah, I mean, so they own the Muppets. Disney owns the Muppet property. Unfortunately, I don't have the article in front of me. I didn't realize we were going to talk about this.
I have the article.
Yeah, but the gist of it seemed to be that Bob Iger, who was the out, he's kind of anti. Somebody was anti Muppets or just wasn't sold on the idea that they were a useful property, which I think is crazy.
The word that they used was he was ambivalent. About Henson's characters that I'm quoting from the article. And Bob Iger had originally relegated them to what was then something called Disney Interactive, which was a part of the company responsible for mobile games and corporate websites.
Right.
Talking of games.
It didn't suggest that that's going to change, you know, with the change in leadership there, but kind of that it might change. And it is really questioning what all of us would say who grew up with the Muppets as a part of our childhood is, why would you not be rolling these out? And I think one of the points it makes is, just like Star Wars became this intergenerational thing, you know, they're throttling off the fact that both people from the age 60 or, you know, 40 to 60 who like had it the first time around when they were kids or teenagers are like fascinated the Mandalorian, and their kids are now fascinated with this stuff at the same time. And why wouldn't the Muppets be the same thing? I 100% would watch a Muppet thing. I think they mentioned in there, they tried out this sort of, it was supposed to be like a Muppet office, like a mockumentary. What would you call that? It's like a comedy that is supposed to be filmed like it's a documentary, but they tried to do a Muppet version of that where they had people have like sort of like real backstage characters, which didn't do well. But that's, why would I want to see that? I want to see the good old Muppet variety show with random celebrities coming on and singing songs with the Muppets.
I mean, again, and it is apparently that, like, when you read, and we will link the article in the blog, it goes into, you know, how much content there is, and the writer doesn't really come to any conclusions to why it's not in there. And then so that, I think that's the point of the article, is you can sort of throw up your own theories. And the only theory I could think was that I think because of the Muppets. Now, you might be about to correct me here, because remember, when I grew up in England, I was exposed to Sesame Street before I was exposed to Muppets. So what I mean is I only ever see the Muppets, and I don't mean this in any kind of quantitative way. In my mind, there was Sesame Street and then there were Muppets. Like, I see them related to Sesame Street in terms of the technology and all that kind of stuff. But here's the thing. I would never in a million years ever think of the Muppets as a Disney property. Now, that's the only...
Because of its tone or just because you just don't remember it happening. Like, you know, do you think of Marvel as a Disney property?
No, I don't. And that undercuts the argument. But that's the only thing I can think of as to why Disney are not cashing in on Muppets, is they don't really think it's theirs. And it runs counter to what... I don't know. I could, and again, I'm not saying... the only theory I would put together is Disney, home of the cartoon. I don't know. Is there some sort of institutional snobbery towards puppetry? I don't know. Well,
they,
I don't know.
You know, they could be. Yeah, it's true.
I mean, like, I can't think of another reason why they wouldn't cash in on hours of programming that they could.
It doesn't seem big enough for them. Like their cartoons and the Marvel and the Star Wars are big things, whereas Muppets, even though it might be like obviously popular nationwide, it feels a little bit like something somebody did in their backyard.
Do you think so?
I don't know.
I will say this. I mean,
there are big explosions and flash and dazzling colors and there are colors, I guess, but
not
easy being green.
At a technological level, there is definitely something very rudimentary about Muppets.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, unfortunately, you know, to the uneducated, because I'm going to say that, because I think you and I both know that any kind of, I remember when we did our Puppets in Space show and we talked about Muppets and we talked about the marionettes that had TV shows in England, doing that stuff is hard. Like what I mean is that to me, it frankly, I think it's easier to do computer generated effects because the computer's doing it. But there is something very like, no, to do Muppets well, while you can look at it and go, it's too easy to go, yeah, this is only one step from a sock puppet. Actually, no. Doing puppets well is as hard as doing like car driving stunts and stuff like this is like hard.
It's a physical performance art.
Oh yeah. But I think because of that, I can only guess that maybe Disney feel that it's just not worthy of the brand, even though they buy it. And I don't know, maybe yeah. I don't know enough about the Muppets to go. I don't know what the Muppets worldwide recognition is. I don't know if you go to Italy or Spain or the Philippines, do people get Muppets? I don't know. But I do know this. All over the world, you say Sesame Street, people know Sesame Street.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what I'm saying is that at that moment, there's definitely nothing parochial about this as a form of entertainment. So again, I don't know. I don't know why Disney. But apparently, what was interesting in the Vanity Fair article was that Disney also put the blocks on a Muppet project that Josh Gad and Adam Horowitz and Eddie Kitsitz were working on for Disney. But then Disney ended up passing on it. They commissioned them to do sort of a Muppet sort of reboot type thing, and then Disney went and passed on it. So I don't know. I guess corporate snobbery. That's the only reason I can have to explain why there are no Muppets on Disney.
Yeah. Well, so maybe the fix for that is. By the way, I'm going back to the bear hunts thing, and the Wikipedia page actually has an entry saying about during the virus, bear hunts became popular. Houses across the United States placing stuffed bears in windows, front yards, and in mailboxes to look for during drives or walks.
I'll be honest with you. I would rather have bears or Muppets on every day at 5:30. Than watching the current coronavirus announcements from the White House.
Yeah. Did you say you saw Muppet on your bear hunt?
Yes, I did. I saw an Elmo. I will post a picture of that on the post. And they had positioned the Elmo on the window like he was like about to be run over, you know, with his arms and his legs wide out type thing. I thought it was quite funny. And that was when I saw it. And that was when I kind of thought, oh, this is a neighborhood thing. Do you know what I mean? But again,
yeah, I think for me, Elmo is like, the Star Wars prequels, you know, Elmo came around later in the game. So he wasn't an original. Sesame Street. No, he's a late arrival. He's a child. So he doesn't really have the same resonance.
So what do you count Sesame Street character? Like, what do you count Big Bird as? Is he a Muppet or is he Sesame Street?
All the Sesame Street.
I'm asking you, the Muppet fan. The Muppet
family. What? You know, but they came along for early. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they for sure came along first. They were there. They were on the PBS stuff before the Muppets became a network item. But, you know, Kermit, I think, was on both. I think he's the only official crossover.
Who's the dude that lives in a dustbin? Who's it lives in a trash can?
The trash.
Is it? What's he on?
What is he?
Well, what show was he on originally? He's on Sesame Street. But so he wasn't on the Muppets.
Yeah, so no. So you have in the Sesame Street, you've got Bert and Ernie. You've got Big Bird. You've got...
Bert and Ernie were on Muppets, weren't they? No, it was the other two dudes.
The grouchy guys in the
belt. Yeah.
Yeah, Bert and Ernie and Cookie Monster.
Okay.
And Grover, the blue... Oh,
Grover, that... Yeah.
No, because you had the guy with the big nose on the Muppets. That was that character. Hey, Grover, and you had...
That's Gonzo.
Like I said, Cookie Monster, you know. Yeah. So, you know, Cookie Monster is excellent.
All right. So Kermit's the only crossover.
Piggy is a Muppets.
Yeah. You know. So Kermit is the Iron Man, to take another Disney-owned character. Well, Iron Man of the Muppetry.
If you ever want to really investigate...
He was on both.
Well, not only that, but he predates them all.
Oh, he does?
Jim Henson is from this area, from this DC area, and there's an early kind of version of Kermit in these coffee ads, like where there was these two Muppets that he made ads for in the very, very early days. I'll just send you the link. It's really kind of interesting.
And so it's not, if I posed you the question, would you watch computer generated sports or the Muppets on a Saturday? You would watch the Muppets.
If it was well done. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, Muppets takes writing skill, too. I mean, like, it's not just a bunch of Muppets. You got to have an entertaining script. So,
have you ever seen that? What's that stage show that's got puppets? Avenue Q?
With all the vulgarity and stuff.
Have you seen that? Is it a good show?
Yeah. I mean, it's not for kids. There was actually, when we went to it, there was some... mother with some kids, and they left during intermission, didn't come back.
Oh. But it's a good old risque humor and what have you.
Yeah.
But it's a good show.
Movie I finally watched. Remember you made fun of Happy Time Murders.
Oh, yeah.
Melissa McCarthy, and it was like a world where Muppets. I thought it was really funny.
Really? I've seen it playing.
And it's an easy watch, and it has some hilarious stuff.
I've seen it playing on cable. And the only reason I don't watch it is because, and this is the weird thing where the podcast sort of takes over life. Because I hammered you for promoting it on the summer movie preview,
I don't want to watch it. Suddenly find out you like it.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
That'd make for a good story. I think you should check it out just to see. Because I'd be like, either way, it's a good story, because if you watch it and it turns out things, now you can come back at me for my re-endorsement of it here, now that I've actually seen it, and say I'm crazy.
Is there anything you are watching or streaming? I know that's the big thing with everyone stuck indoors now as we get towards the end of the show.
Tiger King, you know.
So someone sent me the link to that, and I'm like, yeah, I've got enough. I'm watching Westworld, which takes up a lot of processing power for me. We're watching Ozarks, the Jason Bateman show that they just released the other week. And everyone was going on about Tiger King. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't even... Is it a reality show? I don't...
So here's why I think...
I know nothing about it, and I'm like,
It's a documentary in 7 parts on Netflix.
Okay.
And it is... But it feels like somewhere between those, like, who murdered somebody kind of things,
okay,
or like crimes are committed, a true crime kind of story, and a reality show, because the characters are so freaking out there. So the guy who is the Tiger King is the main character. And so I think that's why, like, it's just...
But it's a mockumentary. It's a
crime thing. You know, it's not like... I don't want to give anything away. It's not that deep, but it's like... Oh my God, there are people like this in the world. So it's like this real, like, look down at it. And but one of the interesting things.
But it's a scripted show.
Oh, no. It's all old footage, like cut together.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so this guy filmed like everything in his life. And so, like, apparently this actual documentary, who wanted to make a reality show out of it, all his, I don't want to ruin anything. Anyway, it's gone. That one didn't come together. But I mean, it's, if you're looking for something to break the tension. Now, the one weird thing about it is that, I think people who watched it and were like tweeting about it and things only got so far, because it was very funny, and it gets a little sadder as it goes on. Not like horrible and evil, but like, oh man, these people are, it's just a mess, you know? And so it feels a little weird to make jokes about it once you've watched them all, but it's a worth a check. We're watching, behind a bunch of episodes of Briar Patch, the Andy Greenwald thing. I don't, that's clearly going to get canceled because they moved it to like After Wrestling or something like that. But it's pretty interesting. I watched about an episode and a half so far of Devs, which is this thing on Netflix. I'm not Netflix, on Hulu with, I'm blanking out on the guy with the beard from the comedy.
Nick.
Recreation. Yeah, Nick Offerman.
There you go.
Main character. And it's like super duper like artsy crime tension thing. It's pretty interesting. You might like it.
Okay. Yeah, but it's Hulu, isn't it? I'm not paying for not a subscription.
Well, Hulu comes free with a bunch of things. Like I get Hulu free with Spotify.
I don't have Spotify. I don't pay for that either.
I just think
I'm a minge bag.
You go check it, what it is. But
I pay for Amazon and Netflix.
That's the other thing this thing has led me to. I might really, if I could get, because you can get Disney Plus, all the ESPN stuff, plus the ESPN Plus things, and Hulu, all for one price for like less than $15.
Okay.
For a month. And like if I had that, plus, you know, the other like Netflix and HBO, like on a streaming service and stuff like that, I might drop the rest of the TV.
I read something today that HBO are putting up, that they're giving like 500 hours of original programming to your local cable provider on the channel for the next month and a half.
Yeah, there's a bunch of the pay channels are
mixed. So basically all the old stuff. So there won't be any new stuff, but any like for example, you're able to watch all the Sopranos and The Wire and Veep and all that type of thing. So basically anything that you're probably getting on Amazon Prime, because that's how I watch some of that.
I'm watching this season of of course our crew is original watchers of Survivor. And like this year is all the champions from, they have like 40 seasons.
Two seasons.
They have like all of champions. Everybody on it was a champion of another season. And it's like kind of wild. And it's pretty intense.
And I've not watched it at all because we've not been together.
Exactly.
I normally watch it when we're all together.
So I don't have a clock here. I don't know how long we've been going.
But let me double. I think we've been going, we've put in a pretty decent shift. Let's put it that way.
You know, the interesting thing is if this turns out audio to be pretty decent,
we would never have to get together again.
Save a lot of time. We can just do it online every couple of weeks.
We will. It'd be interesting. It will be interesting to do maybe, because I don't know when we'll next do a show, but I suspect we will still be locked up. We probably need to do a beer show where we attempt to convince the other person. Because normally
whenever we can't even taste it.
I'm going to go, this is what it's like. I'm going to convince you and why I think you would like it. So maybe we need to set that for ourselves to bring two beers.
One more thing for everybody who may have made it this long is do, if you can, buy things locally. You know, I know we're all tempted to order things off of Amazon because, I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to go out. But if you can figure out how to buy from your local restaurant, get some food. I just ordered a bunch of beer from Rocket Frog Brewery because a bunch of the breweries in Virginia, at least, the breweries can now deliver or give to you, like you can take the stuff away much easily. They've been given license to like deliver beer by the state and order a bunch of beer from them. And I'm trying to really keep those places because you don't want to get through this stuff and we get to even a more of a mass produced nation because all these big chains take over because you're a little local place that can afford to keep everybody working.
You were very critical of me for continuing to go to my local coffee shop in the morning and adhering to all the taped distance rules and everything, but I'm still going.
You sit around there. Like you're supposed to get your stuff and go, but then you go and you sit around.
No, I go and I take it outside and sit down because you're allowed to sit outside. But what I'm saying is I am supporting a small local business. And in fact, I am now over tipping before my prior. I'm now concerned that when we go back, how am I going to go back to the less tip? Normally I just get coffee, but now through this time, I'm getting coffee and a pastry every day. Because it's just, and again, I'm not being facetious.
So the inflation you're worried about may be waistline inflation.
Yes, but again, if you can, support your local businesses, your local restaurants, because they're the ones, your local independent.
To be honest, Amazon's falling down on the job, a lot of the delivery stuff. So.
Oh, it's terrible, yeah. My Amazon Prime doesn't seem to be getting 2 days on some replacement parts for the vacuum. So there you go. So my house is getting dirtier by the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, I think that's the show for this. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com.
And now, on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.